Please welcome Willie Claflin.
Storytelling and working on storytelling, I have one major piece of advice for you, which is do not use props. Please, no, don't use props. I was talking to Bill Harley the other day. We like to whine at each other on the phone or by email. This is hard. I'm tired. I've been on this airplane for 7 hours. I don't have any work this month. I can't finish this piece. And after about half an hour of whining, usually he'll stop and say, Willie, you make a living by waving a stuffed moose around on stage. How bad could it be? As many of you know, I want to tell an old story. Many of you know this all comes from my dad, essentially. My father had, he told me stories every night. A lot of people have told a lot of this, a lot of you this. From the time I was 3 to the time I was 10, told me bedtime stories every night, every single night, and read to me before that. I want to tell my favorite story about my dad, because he would have enjoyed this so much if he had been here. This is called Who Has Seen the Mind? Who has seen the wind? Neither you nor I. But when the trees bow down their heads, the wind is passing by. Part of a poem by Christina Rossetti, and it was my mother's first piece of stitchery. When she was a young woman, all her sisters had done stitchery, and that was the poem that she had picked to do her first stitchery, and it hung in the upstairs hallway of my childhood home in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. There was a little verse, and then there was a little girl flying a kite in the wind, and then these stitched trees kind of hanging over like that. But it was her first attempt at stitchery, her very first attempt at stitchery, and so the letters were a little, as my dad would say, a little skiwanicky. And every single day, because he was a man of habit, every single day when he got up in the morning and when he came upstairs to go to bed at night, he would go by that piece hanging on the wall and he would squinch his eyes up and he would say, "Who has seen the mind?" Neither you nor I. But when the trees bow down their hands, the mind is giving by. And that last phrase, the mind is giving by, became my father's favorite saying. Every time he rushed into the living room because he'd forgotten to get the... had no idea what he'd rushed into the living room to get. He would just pause in the middle of the room and smile benignly and say, the mind is giving by. He was very good-natured about it. My father's mind was a very, very, very busy place. There was almost always some kind of major cinematic event screening inside my father's mind as he tried to maneuver his way through what we would call consensus reality. So that my father's whole life was a moving double exposure. As time went by, my father had met my mother when he was in the middle of one of these intense daydreams. In his mind, he had been in a sports car race. My father loved sports cars. He'd been in second place. He'd been racing at Le Mans for 23 and a half hours. Anyway, he was about to catch the lead car, and the only way he could possibly catch the lead car, because he was in second place, was to accelerate through the turn, executing a four-wheel drift to gain the outside lane and be able to pass the lead car. He got the whole thing figured out. Unfortunately, he was actually in a very crowded area of downtown New Haven, Connecticut. And so when he flawlessly executed the four-wheel drift, he drifted right into my mother-to-be's Chevrolet, which was parked on the corner. Almost totaled her car. Did very little damage to his own car. He could have just driven away. But the family story was, and it was told over and over again, that he'd gone through the three huge business towers on that block, office to office, floor to floor, trying to find the owner of the car he'd run into. And after about 2 hours of looking, he found my mother. And it was her car. He explained what had happened. She was so overwhelmed with what a gentleman he was that she accepted his invitation to go out to lunch. And a year later, they were married. My cousin Martha, my dear cousin Martha, said, if your mom had believed in omens or portents, she might have thought twice about a gentleman who introduced himself by totaling her car. Anyway, they were married, and as time went by, my father did his best to try to synchronize his inner fantasy life with what was going on the outside. One example of this was, and the only one that's really vivid in my mind that I sort of understood something was going on, is when he went down to the post office as the post office was closing, and I went with him one day when I was about 6 years old. Now, my father, because he had very little control over the material world, which kept moving in odd and unexpected ways, he had figured out time. He knew how to measure time. And he'd figured out that if he left the house at 5:06 every afternoon, he could drive downtown, Wolfboro, New Hampshire, get down there, find a parking spot by the post office, go up the stairs, get to the door just as they were locking the post office door. And it was a small New England town. He was the resident eccentric, and they'd say, oh, come on in, Russ, come on in. And it really pleased him when this happened. So I went along with him once, and we left at 6:05, drove downtown, parked up the steps, guys locking the door. Oh, hi, Russ, come on in. And Russ looked at me, my father looked at me, and he said, one moment more, and the doors of doom would have been sealed forever. I didn't say, what do you mean? Because this is back in the, you know, in the 50s, it was like, it was the era of don't ask, don't tell. Universal don't ask, don't tell. Nowadays, you'd maybe want to check in, you know, with some, what are you thinking about? But no, it was just, because it was the era where if you're having Thanksgiving dinner back in those days and Uncle Walter has 6 martinis, falls face forward into his mashed potatoes, big, all families around the table, nobody mentioned, they just passed the gravy over him. It was like a speed bump around the table. Nobody mentions that anything unusual has happened at all. The kids are sitting there, kind of. And afterwards, if the kids are laughing in the living room and the grown-ups, what are you kids laughing about? Nothing. Remember, my father once cried out in the middle of the night, this anguished cry. I must have been about 9 years old. I sat bolt upright in bed, and I said, Dad, what's the matter? And it was a brief pause, and he said, nothing. Nothing. And it wasn't a contemporary California nothing. I'm a New England transplant, so I grew up thinking nothing was absolute zero, outer space, nothing, dark, nothing, nothing, great big nothing like a jar. I didn't realize that it was a fertile cornucopia non-existent everywhere at once point out of which all material manifestations showed themselves in kaleidoscopic harmony moment after moment in a Buddhist Hindu floral arrangement of cosmic awareness. No, it was nothing, and it was kind of a scary nothing. Well, I was sitting at the kitchen table with my mom. I had one class to go before I graduated from college. Spring semester, I was way ahead. I had one class, so I come home from Cambridge on weekends and for half the week too, sometimes 2.5 hours up and back from Cambridge, Massachusetts. I was sitting there with my mom about time to go back to school. It was on Monday, my class was on Tuesday, and we were sitting there. Early spring, blaze of golden forsythia right outside the window, and still some dark kind of purple-white patches of snow under the biggest of the pine trees out there. And we were doing what we always did in those days. We were talking and chain-smoking Chesterfield cigarettes, even though 9 out of 10 doctors preferred some other brand. Lucky's, I think. I don't remember. I can't remember what doctors smoked. The doctors smoked some other brand. But Camels. Can't doctors smoke Camels, although some of them smoke Cools. Some of the doctors, because menthol took care of all that. I was trying to worry about that. So, So we're sitting there, and I loved smoking with my mother because my whole childhood had been spent on the linoleum floor in the kitchen, and the linoleum floor was exactly the same gray-blue swirls as was the cigarette smoke as it drifted into the air, and it felt as if the linoleum was somehow just evaporating into the air. The whole room was full of this wonderful purple, kind of blue-gray, and the forsythia out the window, and my father came rushing through the room, not a moment to lose, bang, out the door. My mom said, oh, post office probably about to close. A moment went by, and he came rushing back into the room, and he said, Alice, where are my keys? My keys, where are my keys, Alice? She said, well, Russ, you know, they're always on the hook by the door or in the last drawer on the counter. He said, I know they are always either on the hook by the door or in the last drawer on the counter, but they are not in my pocket, nor are they in either one of those places. Therefore, where are they? She said, why don't you check your coat pocket on the coat rack there? He said, no, I am not going to check my other coat pocket, and I will tell you why. I never put my keys in that particular coat pocket, and there is manifestly no point whatsoever in looking for something where it is not. My mom said, Russ, would you just check? All right, Alice, he said, and I don't know how these things happen, Alice. I don't know how they happen. Bang, out the door he was gone. My mother leaned over the table towards me. She said, I'm afraid your father is losing touch with reality. When I told my cousin, she said, Willie, I didn't know your dad had any interest in ever maintaining any kind of touch with it. I didn't know he had the idea. But you got to understand how overwhelming this was, even in the early 60s in New Hampshire. We were still a 50s family. The fact that she had mentioned his mental condition was it's the first time anyone in the family had ever alluded to the fact that anyone might have an interior life of any kind, especially a psychology that might not be perfectly adjusted to everything. It was like the 50s redux are kind of spilled over into the 60s. So I just sat there. I said, could I have a cigarette? And he said, yeah. And she said, he thinks the furniture attacks him, and he talks to people who aren't here. Well, I knew about the furniture. One of my earliest childhood memories, age 2, my dad was walking by the dining room table, and all of a sudden he said, Alice, that chair tried to trip me. It tried to trip me. And again, nowadays you would check in, right? Because you would want to know, is this a really kind of a wonderfully funny, ironic, whimsical joke? He tripped over the chair. Or does he really think all the molecules moved in the same direction simultaneously, or that the chair had an evil intent? You would want to know. You'd want to know, because if he really thought the chair had jumped out, you might want him to think about it with someone who wasn't a member of the family and see how they felt about it. And she said, she sighed, and she looked out the window. She said, first there was the encyclopedia. No, chickens. The chickens were first. God, the chickens. And then the encyclopedia. I said, Mom, what are you talking about? She said, oh, he thought he would raise chickens in the basement just before you were born, but they died. So he thought he'd compile an encyclopedia. And I said, I'd grown up with the Encyclopedia Britannica. Tens, 20,000 entries from people in every conceivable field of human discipline contributing all they know to this incredible compendium of knowledge. I said, how did Dad think he could compile an encyclopedia all by himself? And my mom said, well, he said he had a different slant on things. And at that moment, there was a crash, as if several trash cans full of cinder blocks had fallen off the garage roof. And we could hear my father outside. God damn, said my father. Oh, we came running outside, and there was the car on its side in the ditch by the driveway. Steep, steep ditch by the driveway. The car was lying on its side, and my father was sort of clambering out the passenger side door. And he said, Alice, the driveway has moved. It was not there yet. It was 3 feet to the left. I don't know how these things happen. And he went inside to call the towing company. I said, Mom, I think I'll be getting back to school. So I went upstairs to my childhood room, painted dark blue under the eaves there. And I noticed something that made a tremendous impression on me, and I have no idea to this day why. I looked in my childhood bookshelves. All my books were still there, and my mom had arranged them in alphabetical order. It seemed tremendously significant to me. It still does, but I really have no idea why, but I just stared at that for a moment. Put all my stuff in a bag, went downstairs. Tow truck had just about arrived. My father was at the kitchen sink. He turned around and he said, "Who knows what it means to long for the infinite and be faced with the daily multiplication tables?" Maybe you know. I don't know. What, do you know what it's like? Yeah. And then the tow truck pulled up, and I went outside. My mom gave me a couple of bags of groceries. She said, "You and your friends are always so hungry here. Take this back to school." And I got in the car, and tow truck had arrived. My father said, "Easy does it, Smitty." And I said, "Don't you worry, Russ. It'll be okay." They were pulling the car out, and I got in my car, slammed the door. My dad leaned in the window, and the sun just about gone down. And when that happens at that particular time in the spring in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, near Lake Winnipesaukee, the temperature drops about 10, 15 degrees, and all the cold air comes rushing off Lake Winnipesaukee through the woods. Leaves aren't on the trees yet, so the wind just kind of comes whipping through, and the pines are kind of swaying back and forth like that. And my father leaned in the window. He said, "Who has seen the mind?" And I said, "Well, neither you nor I." And then we just said it together, you know, "But when the trees bow down their hands, the mind is giving by." And I rolled up the window and drove down Clark Road, down into the hollow. I could see my mom and dad in the rearview mirror. He had his arm around her, and getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until I turned the corner and they were gone. But sometimes, as I get older and older, it feels like I'm driving in reverse, and they're getting larger and larger and larger in the rear-view mirror as I get older and older and older, more and more prominent in my life now. And every time I walk into a room and can't remember what on earth I went back to get, or I walk up on stage and I think, "What am I going to do?" I just hear this voice all around me that just says, "The mind is giving by." Thank you. Thanks. Thanks a lot. One other thing my father taught me was a love of memorizing stuff. I mean, I thought it was fun. It was what he did for fun, so I did it for fun. I did want to give Maynard a chance to share a story that communicates traditional Moose values here today. I would like to share a story that communicates traditional Moose values. This is called Sleeping Beastly. Once upon a time, there was a king and queen. They live in the forest. And the queen give birth to a baby girl. And they invite the 17 good fairies to the christening. Each one give her a name. They name her honesty, bravery, cleverness, decency, vigor, politeness, obedience, gratitude, health, wealth, loyalty, grace, faith, royalty, duty, beauty, and cutie pie. But I called her Beauty for short, which was probably a good idea. Otherwise, even for to introduce her at parties would take the whole time with no time left over for conversation. Well, she grew up to be a beautiful young girl, and one day she was out in a forest looking for her favorite vegetables, wild broccolis. And through the forest she was going when all of a sudden she hear a tremulating sound. "Oh, ig, oh, ig," say Beauty. But she was not afraid, because bravery was her middle name. But the little furry forest animals were scared, and the birds went twerp, cheeple, and bonked their heads on the tree and fell down with little stars and exclamation points coming out of their birdie brain. Well, through the forest she go, until she come to a high hedge all made of broccoli. And a snorifying sound was coming from behind the hedge. So quietly she climb up the hedge. There on the other side wove a uglify, nastify, snaggletooth, great sleeping beastly, all covered with fur, even on the nose part. Like a big inflatable rug, making a horrible sound. Oh, ig, they beauty, I gonna go home fast if I can. But as she tried to jump down from the broccoli hedge by accident, snick, she break off a little piece of broccoli, and a sleeping beastly wake up. And drawing himself to his full height, which was a full height in indeed, he say, who dares bust my broccoli? Oh, excuse me, said Beauty, but I did not mean to. Say, silence, say the beast. You have busted my broccoli. Penalty for busting broccoli is death. Oh, gee, say Beauty, it was not posted. I mean, if you had even let me know, I certainly would have been more careful. There was no warning. Silence, say the beast. Furthermore, you have interruptified my beautiful dream. I dreamt I was a busterfly flocking amongst the gloxinias. You woke me up. Penalty for waking up beastly, death. You shall die twice. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Silence! Say, sleeping beastly, now, however, that I have laid beastly eyes upon you, I can see you are the most beautiful princess that never I see. Therefore, in consideration of good looks, you shall not die even once. But you shall be my prisoner in yon enchanted castle on the hill. Now follow the dancing furniture and go to your room. And sure enough, there have a table lamp and a little sofa doing the lambada, and up the path they go, up the castle steps, hunkety-bunkety, hunkety-bunkety, down the castle corridor, gdump, 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 until they come to a great big chamber full of wigs and gowns and bonbons and jewels and chandeliers. Huh, say Beauty, not so bad to be a prisoner here. And she start to try on the dresses and the necklaces. But as she was admiring herself with a particularly flattering strand of... suddenly into the mirror come the face of the snaggletooth, uglified, great sleeping beastly, all covered with fur, even on the nose part. Dinner, say the beast, is served. Down to the dining hall go Beauty. Sit down opposite the uglified beastly. Try hard not to look at him. And there is every kind of sumptuous and delicious food you could imagine. The broccoli fondue had a splendid nose. Well, after they have eaten, beastly say, Beauty, if you ever need anything, clap your hand three times. Now watch this. And the beastly clapped a hand three times, and no sooner had he clapped a hand three times than the mashed potato in the mashed potato bowl sculptify itself into a little moose. Go gudump, 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 jump over into roast pork, slide through the peas, knock spoons on the floor, clang, and no sooner had the mashed potato sculptified itself into a mashed potato moose than the beets and carrots sculptify themselves into little beaten carrot people. Whang, whang, pick up the knife and fork, bang, 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 and the little mashed potato moose go gudump, 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 and the beaten carrot man clang, clang, the gravy boat sploop over on the table, and all the slices of bread turn into a little sailboat sailing, sailing on the gravy lake. And pretty soon there was food all over the room. All of a sudden, the beastly clap his hand three more times, snap, 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 and all the food disappear. Poof! And he fall into a deep slumber, repulsively snoring. Oh, ig, say Beauty, and back to her room she go. And you know, first thing the next morning, there by her doorway, a little floret of broccoli with a pink ribbon and a note said from a secret admirer. And so she spended her days dancing with the furniture during the day and dining with the beastly at night until one day she was gazing at herself in the mirror and there was the face of her dear mommy and daddy. Oh, dear, the queen was saying. Where, oh, where is honesty, bravery, cleverness, decency, vigor, politeness, obedience, gratitude, health, wealth, loyalty, grace, faith, loyalty, duty, beauty, and cutie pie? Where, oh, where can she be, said the king. oh dear, say Beauty, I must go home and see my mom and dad, and down the hallway to the Beastly's rooms he go. Please, oh please, he say, I must see my mommy and daddy. Very well, say the Beastly, but you must return in 1 week's time, or I will die deader than a doorknob of a buffeted heart. I promise, say Beauty, and through the forest she go, till she get to her mommy and daddy's castle. And so great was the rejoicing, you can just imagine. Or, if you cannot imagine, it still happened just as if you did not exist. And a wonderful week they spend there together, but when the week is up, Beauty say, Mommy, Daddy, I must go back and see the Beastly, or he will die deader than a doorknob of a busted heart. Excuse me, say the Queen, your father and I have been meaning to speak with you. We think it is extremely inappropriate that you are living with a uglified, nastified, great sleeping Beastly, all covered with fur, even on the nose part. And furthermore, we have reason to believe you have been playing with your food. Therefore, you shall stay in your room until you learn more princessly manners. Oh, geez, St. Beauty, I always have to stay in my room. But late that night, when the moon has risen, she knot the bed sheets together, tie one end around the bedpost, down the sheets she go, through the forest, back to sleeping Beastly's. Will she get there before he die deader than a doorknob of a busted heart? Stay tuned. When she get to the broccoli hedge, there is no snorifying sound coming from the other side, and peering over, there is Snaggletooth's great sleeping Beastly deader than a doorknob. Oh, Beastly, say Beauty, how sorrowful I be to be late, and her tears go sploosh, 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 and all of a sudden, the Beastly disappear, poof, and there is a handsome prince dancing in the moonlight. Hello there, say the prince. Ain't I the handsomest prince you ever see? Check out my fuse, huh? Pretty cute, huh? Lucky for you, the Beastly is gone and you have me, the handsome prince. We get married tomorrow. But what have you done with Beastly? No more Beastly, just me, handsomest prince in universe. Oh, ig, think Beauty. Much more rather would I be he was still the snaggle-fied, fuzzy, great sleeping Beastly than this disgustifying princely person. And so, thinking quick, she clap her hands 3 times. Click, click, click. And the prince turned back into a Beastly again. And clapping her hands 3 more times, she metamorphosed herself into a Beastly too. And no sooner had they laid Beastly eyes upon one another than they fell into mad and Beastly love. And little invisible pink hearts floaty up to the moon. And they were married the very next day in a moving and disgustifying Beastly ceremony. And before long, there were lots of little Beastlies running around, snorifying and playing with their food. And the moral of that story is, unless you wish to marry one, you all should leave sleeping Beastlies lay. Thank you.
Traditional moose values. Well, we are just about at the end here, and I would like to do this song to close with for my father, and I wrote this because, well, 2 reasons. First, no matter how many stories my dad told me, he never put me to sleep with the stories. It was not a matter of lulling me to sleep. I always would want one more story. Always, always. Didn't make any difference. I could out-listen him. He could tell and tell and tell and tell, even after he'd read and read and read and read, and I could always out-listen him. So I would always kind of whine for one more story. And I'd kind of forgotten about that. But the first time I went to the National Festival, I asked Mary Gay if she had any advice, and she said, well, just remember that, like right now, people for 3 or 4 days have been listening to stories, and they are just about storied out. They are wiped out. So think of some way to end the festival or end the conference. I can just, you know, help relieve people's fatigue slightly, or just let them sleep if that's what they want to do. Have mercy upon them during the last 5 minutes. And so I wrote this tune for Mary Gay and for my dad mostly. And it's got a chorus. I'll just kind of line the chorus out for you. You can sing it back like my echo. Chorus goes like this. Shadows are falling, farewell to the sun. Try that. Shadows are falling, farewell to the sun. Moon's on the mountain, this day is done. Moon's on the mountain, and this day is done. I know it's late, you got places to go. I know it's late, you got places to go. I know. But tell me just one more story before you go. Tell me just one more story before you go. That's it. Here's to the third brother and to the stepmother who turned him into stone. And here's to the blind king that stole the gold ring and wanders the world all alone. And here's to the beast in the forest so deep who swallows the children when they fall asleep. And here's to the old wolf dressed up like a sheep, curled up by the fire with his bone. Shadows are falling. Shadows are falling, farewell to the sun. Moon's on the mountain, moon's on the mountain, and this day is, I know it's late, I know it's late, you got places to go, I know. But tell me just one more story before you go. Tell me just one more story before you go. Here's to the sparrow and her bow and arrow. Here's to the carrion crow. Here's to the last riddle. Here's to the lost fiddle playing the one tune it knows. And here's to the secret that cannot be told. And here's to the maiden that never grows old. Here's to the man spinning straw into gold in the dark at the top of the stairs. Shadows, shadows are falling, farewell to the sun. Moon's on the mountain and this day's done. I know it's late, you got places to go. Yeah, I know. But tell me just one more story before you go. Tell me just one more story before you go. Here's to the city down under the sea and the castle that flies through the air. And here's to the kingdom down under the hills and the fair folk who forever dwell there. And here's to the river you cannot cross twice. And here's to that one final roll of the dice. And here's to the treasure that has no price in a valley where nobody goes. Shadows are falling, farewell to the sun. Moon's on the mountain and this day's done. I know it's late, you got places to go. I know. But tell me just one more story before you go. Tell me just one more story before you go. Tell me just one more story. Tell me just one more story. Tell me just one more story before you go. Tell me just one more story.